Good evening and welcome to Future Focus Now. Thanks for joining us today. We're living in very difficult times against the backdrop of a global pandemic that is disproportionately affecting African Americans. We once again find ourselves assailed with horrific images that remind us of the reality of racism in America. While the memories of Ahmaud Arbery and so many others are still fresh, we experienced a video of a white police officer kneeling on George Floyd's neck while Mr. Floyd gasped, "I can't breathe," and his life is snuffed out. We once again are reminded of the writings of James Baldwin on the failure of human rights and social justice. We have emptied oceans with homemade spoons and tore down mountains with our hands. Black America is accustomed to institutional racism in its many facets. However, it can often seem as though our efforts to eradicate it have had too little effect. While I don't condone violence as a means to an end, I do support our fellow citizens' right to peaceful protests, to protest the inequities and injustice in our society. The fury and the grief that people are feeling today about institutionalized intolerance, discrimination, marginalization, and bigotry that have existed in this country and this world for so long. I'm proud today to be chancellor at Winston-Salem State University, a university that for 128 years has been in this space to try to create a more just and a more equitable society. Key tenet of the work that we do at Winston-Salem State is around social justice. That's what we do at WSSU, and that's what we've done for so many years, whether that's looking at education or health disparities or poverty, racism, discrimination. These are areas in which we have tackled and will continue to tackle on the work that we do every day. So as I stand before you in June, as we're getting ready to prepare to return to campus in the fall, not only will we find ourselves in the middle of a pandemic, but we also find ourselves dealing with these social ills and social issues. We will continue to have conversation and continue to have dialogue. I have no doubt that we will be able to design a new experience, a new way of being. We have so many creative faculty and students and alumni who have been in this space for so long. We will lead the way in bringing about a more just and equitable society. So as we look forward to 2020, all of our efforts in getting students back to campus are really prioritized around health and well-being of the Ram family. We are working diligently every day on contingency planning and are developing practices and protocols regarding social distances, personal protective equipment use, classroom configuration, cleaning, and disinfection. Our plans are designed to be flexible and responsive to whatever the future weeks and months hold. We know we will continue to have many, many challenges. And as we look ahead, it will be critically important that every member of the Ram family do his or her part to keep our community safe. This is an all-in approach. Faculty, staff, students, administrators, alumni, the Winston-Salem community, our business community, our health community, our educational community. We are going to do this together. I'm pleased tonight to come with you, to you, to share some of the work that's being done on our campus and how we are designing a flexible in-person fall 2020 experience designed to keep the Ram family safe while moving our community and our university forward. We've looked at guidelines from public health professionals and the UNC system. We've talked to our faculty and staff. We've gotten student feedback and recommendations from campus working groups. WSSU, as a result of this, has revised a new fall schedule, and we will get into that. There's a lot of work that has been going on at the university. I am so proud that I get up every day with some high level professionals who work to make this institution great and to help to keep us safe. And I'm proud of each and every one of them. Tonight, I've asked the provost of the university, Dr. Anthony Graham, to join me tonight in a discussion on future focus now. And so we are inviting Dr. Graham to come and to have a conversation with us. We invite you, those of you who are listening to us, if you have comments or if you have questions, we may even get a chance to answer some of your questions tonight about what's going to happen at Winston-Salem State University. But for now, I have to bring on the provost of the university, Dr. Anthony Graham. Dr. Graham, thanks for joining us. And I'm honored that you have taken time out of your busy schedule. I believe that you're the hardest working man on the planet. I don't think you sleep. I don't think you have slept since students left in March. I think you work 24 hours a day. How do you do it? Welcome and thank you for being a part of Future Focus Now.
Good evening, Chancellor. Thanks for having me. I appreciate the invitation to join you this evening. And you're right, I haven't slept very much because, as you said earlier, thinking about the safety, the health, the well-being of our students, our staff, our faculty, I take that very, very seriously. We literally have people's lives in our hands, even without COVID, thinking about their educational experiences and the opportunities for their futures. We literally have people's lives in our hands, and I really take that seriously. So I don't sleep much. I'm always thinking about how do we do what we do better, and what can we do to improve ourselves? What can I do to improve myself as a leader, as a listener, as a follower? So I take all of this work seriously. So I don't sleep very much.
Yeah. Well, we got to get you some rest, and I'm going to make sure that you take some time off. I've told so many of the executive staff to make sure that they take some time off, and because they've been working extremely hard. Dr. Graham, you've been in higher ed now for over 20 plus years. Have you ever seen anything like this? And tell us a little bit about what happened at the university when this pandemic first started and what we undertook because of it.
Yeah, I've never seen anything like this. You know, we've had disasters and things of that nature in the past, but they were always somewhat predictable. You know, if it's a hurricane, you can see the track coming your way. If it's a tornado, although it might be last minute, you still can see the track coming your way. There's a warning, if you will. And then there's a finite period of time for the event. And then afterwards, usually there's a finite period of time. With this, you know, we somewhat saw it coming, but we didn't anticipate the gravity of the event. And it really has been, you know, difficult to get our arms around because we're in this nebulous space of what happens next. And no one can answer that question. We can all look at models. We can all predict. We can all kind of speculate, but there's no concrete answer to anything. And that's what makes this work difficult and challenging. We are trying to lead in a space where the answers are few and far between, and we're trying to piecemeal information together to make the best decision at that moment in time. But that very decision could actually change in 24 hours because the information can change. So it's very fluid. So it's been a challenge and nothing like I've ever experienced before. What we had to do as an institution in the spring, and you know, it caught us off guard. Coming off spring break, we really had to move into this virtual space, teaching online. Moving the instruction online, moving our students online, moving our faculty into that online environment, thinking about our support services. So whether it's the registrar's office or financial aid, tutoring, supplemental instruction, everything that had to move into this virtual realm. Then we had to go into telework mode. So individuals not physically being on campus. And you've said this so very eloquently, and I quote you a great deal. What we do at Winston-Salem State University and what we pride ourselves on is the educational experience that we create on campus. So to have to move everything into a virtual space where we have really prepared ourselves to make significant impact on student learning on campus, in-person instruction, that was really, really challenging and still is challenging. We're in that space now this summer. So to have to move everything into that virtual realm and to do it on a dime, really, really challenging. But I tip my hat to the faculty. I know I said this to the Board of Trustees last week during the Academic Affairs Committee meeting. At no point did I ever hear one faculty member complain.
Wow.
Every faculty member understood that we were facing something that was external beyond our control, but they never lost sight on what was important, our students. And for that reason, they moved into this virtual space. They attended workshops. They asked questions about how do I teach online? What's the best way for me to engage my students? We started sending out laptop computers to students. We sent out hotspots to students. Faculty needed materials, staff needed materials to work off campus. And everyone just really pitched in and said, we're going to make the very best of these unprecedented times. And I am so proud of what I saw occur with our faculty, with our staff. Our students understood the complexities of the situation and worked with us. So I'm very, very proud to be a Ram, because I don't know if other leaders at other institutions can say what I just said.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that. Provost, did we do the right thing by sending students home?
We did. And I know, you know, students didn't want to leave, and I'm active on Twitter and I engaged the students. They wanted to be here. They still want to be here. But at the time, given what we knew, the best thing to do to ensure that we were protecting their health and safety, our health and safety, was to ensure that we got them back home so that we could reassess our environment and try to figure out what to do moving forward. So absolutely, we did the best thing. And particularly now that we have hindsight, we can see that the African-American community is, you know, has been decimated by this coronavirus. So it was critically important for us to protect their safety and health. So yes, we did the right thing.
Yeah, I'm sure we did the right thing, but it was challenging. What did we learn about our ability to do the impossible? Because I've said this over and over, I think that we did the impossible. What did we learn from this?
Yeah, what I've learned is that no one should say no to me anymore. So when we say we want to do X, I don't want to hear someone say, well, we don't have the resources, or we don't have the manpower or woman power. What we just proved is we can do anything if we're willing to do it. So I believe we learned a great deal about how we can push Winston-Salem State University and this community into the future in ways that perhaps were unimaginable for us, as, you know, short as 4 months ago. Now I believe we can begin to say these things that we've been dreaming about, they're realities. It's just a matter of us committing to the work and moving in that direction.
Fantastic. I agree with you. I mean, as we think about preparing for the fall, I want to take this as an opportunity to remind people who we are. Oftentimes, there are so many things that are happening in the world, so many changes over the past 90 days, and I don't want people to forget. Remind people who we are at Winston-Salem State University, Provost.
Yeah, I actually had this conversation with someone over the weekend, and I told them quite simply, we are a force. There's no institution like WSSU. When you start talking about our mission and what we were founded upon, this notion of social justice and equity. And I look at the protest and I think about what people are saying now. This is what we've been doing for over 100 years, preparing our students, engaging our faculty and staff, challenging individuals in the community to think about systems and the inequities inherent in those systems, and how you can use your intelligence, how you can use what you're learning, how you can use your critical thinking, your problem-solving skills, your voice, whether it's through writing or orally, to make a difference as you analyze these systems and figure out where are there gaps, where are there blind spots, where are there inherent inequities grounded in racism, ageism, sexism, and so forth. And then how do I, as a conduit of change, help bring others into the fold so that we can begin to actively work on these issues and solve them? And that's the critically important thing about Winston-Salem State University. We don't only ask questions, we ask really good questions, But we then say, how do we now solve the problem? Understanding that I may not have the answer, but bringing other people together to look at the issue, we can work to resolve the issue. That's what Winston-Salem State University is about. We are a force and a force to be reckoned with.
Ooh, see, I never thought of it like that, but I like that. I'm going to carry that with me. We are a force. I love that. We're also Provost a First Choice Institution.
Absolutely.
And I don't know if people know that, but they should know that Winston-Salem State University has changed. And now students across this state and across this country come to Winston-Salem State University because they want to be here.
Absolutely.
4 years ago, 5 years ago, when we did a survey and we asked incoming first-year students, was this your first choice? 5 years ago, 40% of those students say WSSU was my first choice. Today, almost 60-some percent of students say that we are a first-choice institution. That's one of the highest percentages that we have of any university in the state. Mm-hmm. So it speaks to the work that we've done around branding this university. And now, even in the midst of a pandemic, Provost, it's paying off. We still have incredible interest in yes. Winston-Salem State. Tell the viewers about what's going on with students who are still interested in coming to WSSU.
Absolutely. We had a great session tonight, Instagram. We don't call it Instagram. We had Instagram Live for the Rams at Home. So all those incoming freshmen for fall of 2020 and those transfer students participated. And being able to engage those students tonight, and we'll do it again on Thursday night, fantastic. But we have, as of June the 7th, 8,533 freshman applications. That's an increase of 8% compared to last year at the same time. We have 1,437 students who have indicated their intent to enroll. That's an increase of 7% compared to last year at the same time. Our transfer population, we have 352 students who have indicated their intent to enroll. That's an 11% increase. Our readmits, 132 students, that's a 28% increase. So when you look at all of the metrics, what you just spoke to about being a first choice institution where people want to be here and they should be here, all of our metrics speak to that. Even at the graduate level, we are seeing increases there. We have a 125% increase in the number of graduate students who have indicated their intent to enroll at Winston-Salem State University. So people are wanting to come to Winston-Salem State University. And as we talked about earlier, they should, because we are a force and they want to be a part of the force. You know, someone told me a long time ago, I think it was an old football coach who said to me, success breeds success. When you're winning, people want to be on a winning team. Nobody wants to be part of a losing team. What you're seeing now, people are saying Winston-Salem State University is winning, CIAA champions. I want to be a part of that winning team.
I was going to mention that, Provost, CIAA champion. Let's not forget that. I know Coach Hill tells me, I talked to him recently. He says, we're hot now. We're hot now.
Right.
You know, because people want to be associated with the winner. Hopefully we can get some of those five-star athletes to come to WSSU as well. Have you been following the discussions, discussions around that?
I have.
What are your
have.
Thoughts on that as being a former student athlete?
Yeah, I hope we will get some of those five stars, and I hope we'll begin to see a trend back to where we were in the 60s and 70s when the best athletes came to our HBCUs. We've got so many of them now going to our majority institutions, and there's nothing wrong with that. I went to a majority institution, but, you know, there's a lot to be gained from attending an HBCU. Even when I was at a majority institution, I always looked down the street and said, wow, I wish I had that experience. You could see the faculty really caring about the students. You could see the faculty, even after you graduated, checking up on you, making phone calls, inviting you back, asking you to come speak to their classes. I didn't necessarily have those experiences at the majority institution. So there's always been something special about the HBCU experience. And I'm hoping we'll begin to see more of these five-star athletes come back to the HBCUs, because what they're looking for at the majority institution, they can get here at an HBCU, but I would argue they would get more at the right. HBCU.
I mean, look, I agree with you. And if they decide to come to Winston-Salem State University, they will be coming to to the number one ranked public HBCU in the country, according to Money Magazine.
Exactly.
And the reason why we're the number one ranked public HBCU in the country is because students come here, they graduate, they get employed quickly after they graduate, and they make a decent salary two Absolutely. Years out. And because of those metrics, you know, WSSU is now really considered one, a destination university, but a university where you come and you graduate, you're going to be in a much better position to get a job. I know you like those statistics.
Absolutely.
I know you've been working in our career services to do even more of that. And I just posted not too long ago, you know, with LaMonica Sloan Wilhelmy leading that effort to get a major grant. But talk about what we try to do at WSSU around career services and preparation for the workforce.
Yeah, we understand that when you come to the university, you're coming to graduate, yes, but you're also coming to enter a career. So you can begin to make a difference, not only within your profession, but within the community where you live. So we are committed to ensure that everything we do orients you to that career aspiration that you may have. And then what you can do, not only to enter the career space, but then make a difference in the career space. So when you begin to start thinking about your freshman year, we want to introduce you and orient you to what your career pathway might be. We want to make sure that you're on the right pathway. And then we want to make sure that we're surrounding you with opportunities, whether they're internships on campus or internships off campus, doing things like our nationwide partnership. And Chancellor, you talk about it all the time, being a signature partnership where our students are able to go to Ohio for the duration of a summer, intern at Nationwide, and really engage in the type of internship experience that's like no other I've ever seen. But those are the types of things that we're thinking about. Even on campus, if you're a work study student or if you're working on campus, we are aligning your work experience with the learning outcomes that we're trying to have you achieve in the classroom. So when you're thinking about critical thinking, when you're thinking about problem solving, oral communication, written communication, we want to make sure that we are putting you in a position to get feedback while you're working on campus about your growth in those areas. So everything that we do, the organizations that you join, everything that we do is intended to bolster your ability to enter your career and then transform what's occurring in that career space. And Chancellor, you said something 5 minutes ago, and I always chuckle when we tell people that of the public institutions, our alumni earn the highest salary in the state of North Carolina. And people always question that. Are you sure? You sure it's not North Carolina A&T because they got engineering? Or you sure it's not North Carolina State because they have veterinary science and engineering? No, it's Winston-Salem State University. Our alumni leave here earning at a rate that is highest compared to all the institutions publicly in the state of North Carolina. So I go back to what I said earlier. We are a force.
Yeah, I knew I had the right person to come on to talk about WSSU, but I heard recently and I reported something about $1 million grant in career services.
Yes, yes. Mrs. Sloan Wilhelmy worked with Aaron Lynch, our associate provost for scholarship research and innovation, and her team in career services pursued a grant with the Department of Labor. And we were fortunate to receive that grant. So it's a little over $1 million. It's $1,186,000 to be exact. And it is providing over a two-year window opportunities, money for students to engage in these career development experiences. So I think it's $40,000 each year, if I remember correctly, or maybe more than that. But we're paying our students to engage in these career development experiences so that we're bolstering their opportunities downrange once they enter their careers. So $1 million investing in our career efforts at Winston-Salem State University.
Wow, fantastic. I mean, you know, that's amazing when you think about WSSU. And I still go back to your comment about us being a force. When a lot of folks think about Winston-Salem State University, they may ask the question sometimes, Provost, that, you know, if I go to that institution, it's a small institution, Are they involved in any research? Do they bring in research dollars? I want to get involved in research. Please enlighten our listeners about what we do from a research standpoint.
Absolutely. We're a sleeping giant. People don't know the impact that we have in the research space. Dr. Lynch shared with me just last week, our total portfolio in the grant-sponsored research area was $49 million as of last Friday.
What?
After, I think it was Monday, we received an announcement that we fortunately received two additional large awards, one for our clinical lab science program, right around a little more than $1 million, and then for our occupational therapy program, a $3.2 million award. So we are right around $55 million thereabout in terms of our sponsored research. Now our new awards is somewhere right around $20 to $21 million for this academic year. So people think of us as a teaching institution, and rightfully so. We do a bang up job in the classroom with our students. But what they don't realize, the secret to our success, is that this research that we do really ties directly back into what we're doing in the classroom. And we're positioning our students through research to ask really good questions, which is why I said with confidence earlier, I know we ask good questions because our faculty are leading these types of efforts on the sponsored research side to ask really good questions. More importantly, they're seeking answers to those questions. And we're engaging our students, whether it's through our centers like CSIM or our Health Disparity Center or in the classroom, whether it's in health and sciences or whether it's in the college. You know, we are engaging our students, our faculty, our community to ask good questions and seek answers to those questions, leveraging sponsored research dollars to really elevate the work that we do at Winston-Salem State University.
And what an amazing time to be on the cusp of opening up a brand new science building.
Yes. Yes. We get to open that up. We're actually moving into it a little bit earlier than we planned. We thought January 2021, but we will be having classes there this fall. So we'll talk more about that later. But yes, a brand new science building that's drawing a lot of interest from community partners wanting to know how can we partner with you all to carry out some of the scientific research that you're doing on your campus. So again, we are a sleeping giant.
Look, I'm sitting here and now I understand why there's so much interest in Winston-Salem State University. You talked about the research, you talked about career services, you talked about the academics, you talked about athletics and winning championships. I wanted to get into this space because we want students to return to campus and we want students to continue to have interest in coming to Winston-Salem State University. You and I have talked over the past 20 minutes about why folks should come. We now know that we're moving into a very interesting phase of the pandemic. We've had conversations. We meet 2, 3, 4, 5 times a week thinking about preparing students to return in the fall. There's a lot of questions, a lot of angst by parents, by students themselves. There's angst around from faculty about returning. A lot of anxiety going on around that. Let's talk for a moment about what we are doing to alleviate some of that anxiety and some of that angst as we prepare for students to return in the fall. Understanding, as we began this conversation tonight, things change daily.
Right.
You know, what we know today may change tomorrow. We're following this pandemic. I happen to be, sit where in an organization where we monitor this in real time. And I'm concerned a little bit about some of the cases and some of the uptick in cases that I'm seeing, but we'll manage that. We'll talk about that a little bit later if we have a chance. But talk about what we have been doing at Winston-Salem State and some of the guiding principles around our attempt to make sure when students return to campus, faculty return to campus, our staff returns to campus, visitors return to campus, that they're returning to a safe environment and hopefully where we can protect them.
Absolutely. We adopted two guiding principles early on. Number one, we said we would protect the health, the safety, and the well-being of our faculty, our staff, and our students. We know that our greatest resource at Winston-Salem State University, our people. And if we're not protecting our people, if we're putting our people in harm's way, then we are not protecting our greatest resource. So that's guiding principle number one. Guiding principle number two, we said we would be committed to maintaining the academic integrity and high quality regardless of the instructional modality. So those two guiding principles have been at the heart and core of every decision that we've been making along the way.
So check that out. Pause for just a moment, sure. Provost, because I want you to take the academic one, mm-hmm. the academic integrity piece, because you and I, we talk about this a great deal. You know, when we had to send students home and we went online, you and I have talked about this a great deal.
Right.
Going online and be able to teach effectively online, you know, that's two different things. Mm-hmm. So I want you to talk a little bit about what we are doing to make sure that when students return, that they return in a system that we've created that has the highest academic integrity.
Absolutely. So we know that those learning outcomes that I spoke of earlier are kind of our guiding light. We want to make sure that every student who enters the portals of Winston-Salem State University leave being able to think critically, problem solve, you know, oral communication, so on and so forth. So we have to make sure that as we're engaging our students, whether it's face-to-face, a hybrid modality or online, that those learning outcomes are being achieved, that we can measure and assess those outcomes and then report on the back end the outcomes of what happened. So we can evaluate how we're performing and then make improvements where necessary. So that commitment to academic integrity and high quality is critically important. So we have invested a great deal of time, energy, and financial resources to ensure that we're positioning ourselves not to be caught off guard again. So if we have to move back into the virtual realm, that virtual space, we're doing it in an effective way. I told someone what many institutions did back in the spring, they were teaching online. They weren't online teaching. There's a philosophical difference. Teaching online is just putting all your stuff online and then just carrying it out. Online teaching means you've given some thought to it. There's an intentionality, there's a systemic approach, there's a strategic approach. You've thought about your learners, you've thought about the ways to engage those learners, the differing ways that they receive information, and you're planning around that. So what we are doing now and what we will continue to do throughout the summer, we've had some online teaching institutes led by our city staff, Dr. Wanda White and her amazing staff. You know, they're a small group, but they remind me very much. They're a microcosm of Winston-Salem State University.
Small but mighty.
And they are a force. But they've had these online teaching institutes to help faculty get better prepared with the notion of teaching in this online realm so that they are truly online teaching, not teaching online. So we've got these online teaching institutes going on. We are also bringing on board a number of faculty to design and develop well over 200 classes that we would offer in the fall so that a faculty member could pull them off the shelf for online instruction and be able to use those classes in the fall or be able to use them as hybrid if they so choose. So we've got a number of great faculty who have committed to work throughout the summer to learn more about how to design online instruction, how to develop these classes using the Quality Matters framework. So again, that commitment to high quality, understanding that classes have to meet certain standards and certain competencies as they're designed. So our faculty are engaging in this process of designing courses using the Quality Matters framework. But every instructional unit or module that will be developed around student learning outcomes. Activities will be aligned to those student learning outcomes. And then the assessment rubrics, the scoring plans will be aligned to those student learning outcomes. There will be engaging instruction throughout those modules. So whether they're PowerPoints with voice overlay, podcasts, synchronous instruction like we're doing now, Zoom conversations, WebEx conversations, recorded webinars, all of these things are becoming part of what we are making our repertoire to ensure that we're delivering high quality instruction and that our faculty feel comfortable and confident moving into this space. But we also understand that this has to be ongoing. You know, you always have to revisit, how do I get better teaching here? And more importantly for the students, how do I get more comfortable learning in this way? So we will be designing these professional development workshops throughout the fall and spring. So if we're in this online virtual space or in this hybrid space, no one is feeling left out or excluded, because our mission as an institution is to ensure inclusivity. And that's what we're going to be committed to doing as we think about our instructional approach for the fall and spring.
Right. I mean, and I think that's important. And I want everyone to know that academic integrity is at the key hallmark of what we do at WSSU. That is important. Going into the fall, let's talk about the fall now. And before I get to the fall, though, let's talk about commencement, Provost. I know that's been on the hearts and minds of our graduates, our 2020 graduates, as well as parents and other folks. Talk a little bit about graduation and what we hope to do in the future.
Yeah, so I want to make sure people are using the right language. We did not cancel commencement. We postponed it. So let's make sure we're using the language of postponement. And obviously we postponed it for the coronavirus for good reason. And I know I got a lot of phone calls from parents and students. They were upset. They were angry. And I understand. I've been saying all along, I couldn't imagine not being able to participate in my commencement immediately in the spring when I was anticipating graduating. So I understand and I have empathy for the situation. However, we didn't want to put anybody in harm's way. So as we talked about earlier, we made the right decision by postponing commencement. It's our hope that we will have commencement in the fall, most likely in December. Lawrence Joel Coliseum, hopefully in December. So that's the idea. Obviously, a lot of this will be contingent upon where we are with the vaccine, where we are with being able to mitigate the virus and the spread of the virus. So all of those things will be considerations as we give thought to commencement in the fall. But it is
hopefully in large gatherings. Where will we be in terms of being able to do that as well?
Exactly. And we keep monitoring CDC guidance. We're monitoring the governor's plan, his phased approach to reopening the state, and what I believe will probably be some adjustments to that plan now that we see an uptick in the number of cases in the state of North Carolina. So we're going to monitor all of the data as it's available to us, and we'll make decisions as we go along based on those data. But right now, the plan is postponement until December, and we'll give some consideration to what commencement looks like. It could very well be that we don't have one large commencement for people. It could be that we break the commencement up where we can do social distancing and make use of the Coliseum and the entire size of the Coliseum. We're giving thought to all these different types of iterations. So again, guiding principle number one, protect the health, safety, and well-being of our people. And that will be what drives our decision making.
And rest assured that students will be involved in that decision,
yes,
in that process. And certainly those who were scheduled to graduate will be actively involved in that. I want folks to understand, we did not cancel graduation. We postponed graduation. Exactly. That's important for us to know. Let's get into right now the nuts and bolts. Where are we, Provost, in terms of the fall schedule?
Yeah, so I want to pick up on the point you just made. We made sure as we've moved through these processes and we've put together project teams and task force and work groups that we've had the voice of our faculty, that we've had the voice of our staff, that we've had the voice of our students where applicable. And it's been fantastic to bring these individuals together to really test ideas and to get feedback. And there's been a lot of push and pull, but that push and pull makes us stronger. So I do want to publicly recognize and thank Dr. Misha Steed, the chair of our Faculty Senate. She's done a great job ensuring that the faculty voice is engaged. Ms. Winbush, the outgoing president of the Staff Senate, she's done a great job ensuring that the staff voice is engaged, as has Mr. Gunther, the incoming Staff Senate chair. Our students, SGA, they've been great in terms of engaging us. So I just wanted to make sure that I recognize the multiple individuals who've been present and engaged throughout these conversations. So Having said that, when we look at our fall plan, we will begin instruction. Our classes will begin on Monday, August the 17th, which is 1 week earlier than we planned. The normal operating date would have been August 24th. We've pulled it up or pushed it up 1 week to Monday, August 17th. On-campus instruction will end on Friday, November the 20th, before the Thanksgiving break. Final exams then will move into the virtual space on Monday, November 23rd, and will conclude on Wednesday, December the 2nd. And then final grades will be due on Friday, December 4th. So it's still the same amount of time between the end of exams to when grades are due. It's always been a 2-day window, so that hasn't changed. But we've essentially pushed everything up to ensure that we can elongate the holiday break so we can do a great deal of sanitizing the campus, deep cleaning, those types of things, so that we can get ourselves ready for spring 2021. But people are coming back to a campus that has been deeply sanitized. And again, the health, safety, and well-being of our individuals, priority number one. So this calendar ensures that we have 75 days of instruction, which we're required to have. In order to achieve that, we had to eliminate fall break. So the fall break, the 2 days in October, those 2 days have been eliminated, but we've kept our Labor Day weekend or our Labor Day break. So Labor Day as a holiday is still there. But in order to achieve the 75 days, we had to eliminate fall break. That may be disappointing for some people, but again, the intent is to ensure that we're protecting your health, your safety, your wellness. So all these decisions are being made with you at the core of our decision making.
Yeah. So
that's the calendar in terms of how it looks.
Let's look at a couple of events that typically occur. You mentioned fall break, and you kind of went through why we're not having a fall break. It looks like Thanksgiving is in play in terms of this. We know we have homecoming, we have Founders Day, we have, I haven't even gotten into athletics yet, right, which I know is a big one. I will tell folks, in some of these events, we have not made a final decision as to what is going to occur. Let me just take them quickly, and we don't necessarily have to discuss them, but we may get into some discussion of that. Athletics. We've not made a decision at this point today in terms of athletics, fall athletics. If you ask me, I think there's a great chance if things go as they are going and we get some improvement, we may be able to make a decision fairly soon on whether we're going to have fall sports or not. We have not made a decision about homecoming. That is a major event. And I want folks to understand, we have not made that decision because we don't know what guidance we're going to get from the state or from the system regarding large gatherings. And so we know, for example, it appears at this time we would not be able to have a typical homecoming if we had one as we have had in the past. And you know, you heard me probably this week and last week, if you can't get together for an HBCU homecoming, what is it and what do you have? And do you really have homecoming? I had an opportunity to really get on a virtual call with the National Alumni Association, and I posed a question to them about homecoming. And I got a variety of responses from, you know, presidents of chapters and the national president. I got some feedback about that. And there's a lot of, I think, is a growing interest in maybe rethinking homecoming given the current pandemic. We're in the process of doing that. But as we speak today, I can't say that we're going to, you know, just cancel it outright, but we will see going forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think we have to keep in mind that this pandemic is attacking our community at an alarmingly high rate. So do we want to have mass gatherings where we're putting people potentially in harm's way, knowing that underlying health conditions really run rampant in the African-American community? So while homecoming, we want to have fun, we want to party, we want to bring people together so that they can reminisce, but we don't want to do it at the expense of your life. And that's the most important thing. Your life is critically important to us. we value you, we value all that you bring, and we celebrate your livelihood. We don't want to put that in harm's way so that we can have fun for a couple of days. We can have fun in the future, but right now we want to protect you and your well-being.
Yeah. And one other thing I will say about the sports, that we're getting guidance both from our conference, the CIAA, as well as from the NCAA, about our ability to have fall sports. What we do know at this time, that if we have fall sports, they will be greatly reduced. Mm-hmm. The Division II at the NCAA unanimously voted to reduce by 33% the number of games that you need to play in order to qualify for a championship. So even if we do have fall sports greatly reduced by 33%, I want folks to really kind of understand that.
Yeah, and I saw, I think it was on ESPN, where a number of universities that have already brought some of their student athletes back, specifically their football players, they're starting to have outbreaks on their campus. So I know Auburn had a case, or I think Mississippi State, and I think I saw somewhere in Texas. So, and it's just not the student athletes, but the strength and conditioning coaches and some of the coaches as well are being tested and being found to be symptomatic. So I think we need to pay attention to what's happening around us and really make some informed decisions based on what the data and what the information tell us.
Yeah. Let's deal with some questions that folks, you know, may have. You and I both have sons that attend universities in the state. Yes. What would you tell parents about, you know, having their sons and daughters and loved ones come back to campus in the fall?
Yes. So I would say make sure that you are adhering to whatever the institution is putting out as guidance for the safety and health of your child. If the institution is saying whether it's expected or required to wear masks, ensure that your student, your child, is wearing a mask. If there's guidance around the way that dining operates or the way that things occur in the residence halls, adhere to what that guidance is. So number one, educate yourselves on what the guidance and what those policies are, and then make sure that you're educating and having conversation with your child or your children about that guidance so that they understand what the expectation is. This really is, I heard someone say this earlier today in a board meeting, this isn't a new normal, this is the next normal. So we have to make sure that people are getting enculturated into what the next normal is. So being aware of those guidance, that policies and so forth, and then complying with those things, making sure that you're doing, as my mother used to say a long time ago, boy, just make sure you're washing your hands and you're cleaning behind yourself. You know, we have to make sure that our students understand the importance of cleanliness. It's not good enough anymore to have a dirty room. You have to make sure that you're cleaning up behind yourself, that you're washing your hands, that you're mindful of whether or not you're shaking people's hands. And for me, that's been a really challenging thing. I'm a handshaker. So I'm having to now get into the habit of not shaking hands or not giving people fives and hugging them and all of that stuff as we do in our community. But, you know, doing more of the head nod and that type of thing. But making sure that we are aware and apprised of what the next normal is and those cultural expectations to ensure that our children are being safe and that they're abiding by and complying to whatever those rules and guidelines might be.
Yeah. Now, you and I are having this conversation, and it is a mechanism, it's a vehicle where we can get information to the public. But if folks really want to get some more detailed information about what we are doing at Winston-Salem State University, we certainly encourage them to go to our website. We have a website that folks can find additional information about protocols and procedures that we are enacting at WSSU. What are some of the things that students might expect or to happen when they return to campus?
Yes, so a couple of things. Again, going back to wearing the mask, it will be an expectation that students will be wearing masks. Our students are going to see a great deal more of the hand sanitizers, the disinfectant wipes, those types of things. We're going to ask students and faculty and staff as we're transitioning in our classes, for example, to make sure that you're wiping down your stations and so forth, so we can make certain that that area remains clean as you're engaging. And then before you leave, maybe wiping it down again. Our students are going to experience classes in non-instructional rooms, for example. So we typically don't have classes in the Thompson Center. We typically don't have classes in DJR. We typically don't have classes in Eller Hall or Gaines. We typically may not have classes in Dillard Auditorium, where we're going to start making use of those facilities because they're large venues and it allows us to spread people out so that we can achieve social distancing. So they're going to begin to see more classes in some of these non-instructional sites. But again, it's for their safety and protection. We're going to elongate the day. So we're going to make use of the 8 o'clock a.m. to 9 o'clock p.m. window. And between classes, there are going to be longer transitions. So rather than there being a 10-minute transition between classes on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and a 15-minute transition on Tuesday, Thursday, there will be 20-minute transitions. So we're elongating the day and we're making those transitions longer so that we can ensure students aren't bumping into one another as a group moves out of the classroom and a group moves into the classroom. We don't want that type of bottleneck to occur at the door. So we're making the day a little bit longer. The Tuesday, Thursday, 3:30 to 5 o'clock, where we tended not to have classes, we will eliminate that for the fall semester, possibly for the spring, because we want to make use of the entire day for those instructional blocks so that we can ensure that we're getting the instruction in for all of our students. So these are some of the things that they can expect to see. We're going to work with facilities to identify doors that are entrances only and doors that are exits only, stairwells that are up only and stairwells that are down only. The idea is to keep people flowing in one direction rather than them crossing paths so that we can hopefully mitigate the risk of spread of the virus. So those are the types of things that students and faculty and staff will see in the fall, where we're really thinking about ways to ensure that we're protecting their health, their safety, and their well-being.
Excellent. And if they want to get additional information, they can once again go to our website and that we've put up, and we actually have a very detailed roadmap to opening up for the fall that they can look at, a 2020 roadmap. Please take a look at that. A couple of things, we don't have much time left, but do really, really quickly. What if students return to campus and there is an outbreak and they have to return home? Is that a possibility?
It is a possibility. You know, we're prayerful that that won't happen, but if it does happen, we have a contingency plan in place for it as well. Moving instruction back into that online environment. So everything that I talked about earlier, those online teaching institutes for faculty, the designing and development of online courses, thinking about students returning in the fall so that we're orienting them to what online instruction may look like, faculty being oriented to online instruction, all of these things ensuring that we're offering high quality coursework in the fall. So we're planning for that potential contingency. That is the worst case scenario. We're prayerful that we won't end up in that space because of all the things we're going to be doing, working with facilities, finance, and administration. They've done a great job. Jason Stogner, our director of emergency management at Winston-Salem State University, Sarah Isom, Eric Steelman, that whole team, they've been phenomenal leading the institution as we think about these different types of issues.
Some of the best emerge. Some of the best in the business.
Yes.
Some of the best in the business.
Yes.
I mean, I sleep well at night knowing that that team is in place.
I agree. And they push us to think about the blind spots. They push us to think about what do we need, plexiglass, mask, PPE, so on and so forth. So as we're thinking about all these operations, we've got a great emergency management team that's really pushing us to think and to think outside the box, to be quite honest with you. So I feel good about our planning, and we will continue to be very vigilant in the work that we're doing. Chancellor, you said this earlier, we meet all the time. We ask 1,000 questions And then we try to answer each one, and invariably a new question emerges. So we keep pursuing it. So we realize that the work is just beginning. We're not close to being finished, but I want to assure everyone who's listening that your safety, your health, your well-being is at the core of all that we're doing.
Absolutely. And we just don't want to be student-centered. We also want to be almost, I say, everyone-centered. Yep, you know, absolutely. So real quickly, before our time is up, faculty may have some angst about returning to campus. Quickly talk about that and give us a snapshot of what a classroom might look like.
Yeah, so a classroom could look, so I'll use this as an example. So if you had a class of 50 students meeting in a room that would hold 55 students, so that's the max capacity of the classroom, we're going to move that class into a larger facility. And if we can't move that class into a larger facility, then we'll look at trying to reduce the capacity of that class. So we might cut it in half and then break the class up into two. So irrespective of what direction we go, now we have to start thinking about how do we ensure that the students in the classroom are separated 3 to 6 feet? How are we ensuring that the students are wearing masks, faculty are wearing masks? Group work might look differently. So we might now use technology a great deal more, because you can still do group work in the technological realm. So if you think about Zoom as an example, you can put people in Zoom and do breakout rooms while they're in the same physical classroom without them having to sit together. So there are different ways to engage students using technology and different ways to engage them from a pedagogical standpoint. So we're going to have to engage a great deal more there. So the instruction might look differently. We might use a lot more hybrid approaches. So a class that meets Monday, Wednesday, Friday may meet on Monday, but then be away in the virtual space on Wednesday and Friday and return the following Monday or some variation thereof. So things are going to look different, but you mentioned this earlier. We're trying to think through a flexible approach so that faculty can think about teaching, but also not feel threatened about being on campus, so that students can engage in the learning process, but not feel threatened by being in a. So we're thinking about all these different types of approaches that we can take, but at the core of what we're doing, safety, health, well-being, integrity, high quality. Right. Those are the five words that I keep preaching to people. Those are the things that are driving all that we do.
Right. And Provost, work is going to be different. Yes. We've learned a lot about how people work. So when folks return, they might not return the same way, and some might not return at all because exactly. They may now be teleworking.
Exactly. Yeah. I think what we've learned, I think in the past, people were afraid to let people work at home because they thought they wouldn't work. They'd be right. At home. But I think what we're learning now is, A, we can trust our employees. They're mm-hmm. professionals. B, we have the technological tools to do the work that needs to be done from afar. So access to campus, VPN, and all these things that Raisha Cobb and her fantastic team at OIT that they keep teaching me and I'm learning every day. We can do a lot of the work at afar and still be as efficient and effective as we are on campus. So teleworking, I think, is going to be something that's here to stay. What that looks like in terms of rotational and all of that, that's going to be worked out with supervisors in those units. But I envision teleworking being a part of our future into perpetuity. I don't see that changing.
I do as well. Provost, what a great conversation, man. I know there's so many other areas we can get into, but we've come to the end of the hour. You have been a great guest. This is one for the historical vault, I think. I mean, because I think people will go back and they will look at this conversation and they will get a bird's eye view in terms of what was happening during the pandemic in 2020. I thank you for your time. We might have to get you to come back as things change, and we know they change all the time. Everyone, thank you for joining us tonight. This has been a great conversation with Provost Dr. Anthony Graham. And so really join us next week on Future Focus, where our guest will be Mandy Cohen. She will come and she will enlighten us about what's happening in terms of health and human services in North Carolina. And she's been one of the leading voices in making sure the public is aware what's going on during this pandemic. So it should be a great, great conversation with her. Join us next week. Tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend to join Future Focus next week. So good night, everyone. Thanks for joining us. Good night, Provost.
Good night. Thank you.
All right.